Hello, and welcome to episode 119 of Linux Dev Time. I'm Joe.
I'm Omelith.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Andy.
Good to talk to you all again. Andy, you are giving up with the Play Store when it comes to your games. Why?
Yeah, so every kind of 6 months or so, Google emails me, and sometimes they're just saying, oh, you have to accept the terms and conditions for tax changes in Iraq or whatever. And, you know, you don't have to do much. But from time to time, they make some change to the way that you engage with the Play Store as a developer of an app. And it's become more and more onerous. And it's also just become, I've just become tired of constantly having to do what they say. So sometimes you have to log in and accept something. They've changed the way the actual developer console, which is what they call it, works. So I find it almost impossible to know how to make a new release of my app. I don't know what it's optimized for, but it's not optimized for someone who just wants to upload an APK file and release their app. And then the recent changes that they brought in. So they've done various things where you just have to tick a box to say that your app is not designed for kids or that kind of thing. But the recent one, they wanted my home address and contact details, and they wanted to publish that on the store.
What?
And they're going to remove the app from the store if I didn't agree to that or make my app free. So it's something about, because you're like involved in a transaction with the customer directly and they're just a middle person, they want like published details of your address. And at that point, I was like, what am I getting out of being a developer on the Google Play Store? I'm making like 10 quid a year or something. And, you know, I don't get much out of it. The only time I really got a good stuff out of being on a store was when I put my Box Stacker game on F-Droid, and there was a big influx of people playing the game. And that was really exciting. And I was like, okay, it's worth doing this. And by the way, it was a huge hassle getting it on F-Droid, but that was because of their very high standards for like openness and not being tied to a particular server and all that kind of stuff. So it was all good things that I support, even though it was a big effort, but very contrasting with Play Store, where they're just getting you to agree to things that you don't understand and jump through hoops, which presumably are protecting them from some weird legal liability they've got. But it just comes across as a huge hassle for no benefit for me. So I've decided I'm going to stop bothering.
You've heard of Google. Now get ready for Apple, is all I can say. Try publishing stuff on Apple stores.
Well, I opted out of Apple very early on because it was an annual fee instead of a one-off fee. And I didn't have a Mac. And without a Mac, you can't make an app for Apple Store. And then, once I'd already opted out because of those things, it then became clear that they were actively hostile to things that are GPL licensed. And so I was even more out than I was before.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to ask was, like, how does this compare to the Apple App Store? But that kind of answers that. The other thing, though, was, is this presumably because, like, I don't know, if you were a company publishing an app, they want your business address, and because you're not publishing as a company, they're just asking for an address, and the only one you have is your home address? Or are they legitimately asking for, like, we want home addresses of the, you know, people behind this?
I think it must be a sign that basically individuals publishing apps from their bedroom is no longer a thing they care about at all.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well.
Which is so sad, because when this thing all started, it was actually a way for people to do that kind of old-fashioned thing like people used to do with ZX Spectrum games, right? Where you just code it up in your bedroom and send out some tapes or whatever people did. And it seemed like maybe there was a way forward for that kind of individual to sell their work. And it's just eroded over time. And now you have to be some kind of awful corporate machine that pumps out clones of other games with graphics that look like they were generated by AI, even though they were designed before AI was a thing. And it's all very sad and depressing.
Yeah, where's your Flappy Bird clone?
Well, I have written one, but it's not on the Play Store. It's just on my Small Pixel website.
So without stuff of the Play Store, like the, the reach or finding new users, have you tried stuff like Obtainium to just publish to, I don't know, like a GitHub release and have people download it from there? Like, presumably if the people who are, you know, downloading and enjoying these things, if they can find a new way to get it, like that would kind of just cut out all of the Google nonsense, right?
Yeah, the question of how to reach people, I don't understand it, because the Play Store is no longer a way to reach people unless you are one of these massive factories churning out stuff. I don't see people finding my apps through the Play Store. when I search for the name of the app, it's so far down the results that I can't find it by just paging down. I run out of patience on the like 100th page or whatever. And it's just not there. So I don't know. Yeah, you reach people, I guess, in ways like through social media and stuff like that. And actually, in terms of having an APK for people to download and install on their phone, well, if you've got an F-Droid listing, they can download an APK directly from there. So that's probably good enough. If you just want to point people at, you know, download it from here or get it through F-Droid, which is a much better way.
I suppose it comes down to the question of, do you want to make money out of it or do you want as many people to play it as possible? Or is it both?
Yeah, I mean, I'm motivated by wanting people to play my stuff or use my stuff. But I also wondered whether I might make money by putting it on the Play Store. And I think that the Play Store doesn't succeed for either of those uses for someone like me anymore.
I mean, I think it's largely both app stores that have decreased. Like it's much harder for a solo dev to make any sort of reasonable income off of either of the app stores. Like it's just not a thing. That the price of that market has been driven so close to zero that without a massive budget and a company and all kinds of other strategies to, you know, have some sort of service offering, like I think it's just that has gone by the wayside, unfortunately.
Yeah, it has to be freemium these days, doesn't it? Effectively, you have to have some value add within the app, whether it's a game or another app, either ads or premium features or whatever.
Yeah, and that's something that I didn't want to do. And that would have been the way, I guess, if I wanted to try and get visibility through the Play Store, it would have been like, I don't think it's possible even now. If you release a free app now, I think it will just disappear. When I released my apps and made them pay for Rabbit Escape, I released both as a free app and as a pay for app. And I made the point on the store page, like only buy the pay for one if you want to give me money kind of thing. But even the free version of that didn't get a great deal of attention. I mean, maybe it's just not that good, you know, but I like it. Or you could talk about it on a popular podcast.
Yeah. We should definitely link to all of your cool games.
Yeah, I mean, I like when a project that I'm using or enjoying says something like, hey, we have a paid for app that does nothing other than support us. I'm usually super likely to engage with that and actually pay for it.
Yep.
But a lot of times, like, some projects just don't tell you that, or you don't know, or like, I might stumble across them like, wow, if they didn't just one time told me, hey, you know, if you like this thing, consider supporting us. Like, oh, great. The hard part is when it happens like on your first startup, I'm like, I don't know if I like this yet because I just opened it. But if it's one of those things like, you know, later, hey, you've been using this for however long or whatever, if you enjoy it, there are ways to support us. I think some projects are just less inclined to do that, which is unfortunate because I would like to see some more of these like indie devs and, you know, be able to make something out of it.
I think it is a question about whether you're looking to make money, right? So I was never looking to make money from these things. I wondered about the possibility of going viral and suddenly being able to retire, but it never was top of my mind. So I don't really have experience to talk about what it's like to actually go out there and make an effort to make a living from something like this. People do that, and they do sometimes write blogs about it, and it sounds pretty depressing and awful. But yeah, adding features where the paid version has additional features and things like that, I don't think I would object to that as a business model. So that kind of work could get you more. I have a donate link under my videos and under my stuff on F-Droid, and one wonderful person signed up for that, and so I get like 94 pence a week or something. So thank you to them. But yeah, it's never quite been an income I could live off.
I like the model that some open source Android apps adopt where they put the free full version in F-Droid and then the version in Google Play or the Apple Store, whatever, is paid. And that funds not only the fees to be listed in that store, but also the development that goes into it and all that.
Yeah, well, look at what the KDE people did. Krita, for example, they put that in the Windows Store as a paid-for app, but you could just go to their website and download it. But some people just prefer to use the store.
And that was actually my strategy with Box Stacker. I put it on F-Droid for free. I put it on the Play Store for £2, and no one downloaded it from the Play Store. And I had this hit on F-Droid where for like a few weeks, there were like loads of people playing it because it had gone on there, which was really exciting and fun.
Did you have anything in the app that said, if you like it, go buy it from the Play Store or something like that?
No, and I didn't have anything saying donate either. Yeah, it would have been sensible if I was looking to make money to put a little donate link in there or something like that.
Okay, this episode is sponsored by people who support us with PayPal and Patreon. Go to linuxdevtime.com/support for details of how you can support us too. Linux Dev Time is part of the Late Night Linux family, which means that for $10 a month on Patreon, you can get access to an RSS feed that contains all the Late Night Linux family shows without adverts like this. There's also an option to get just this show ad-free for $5 a month. Some of the episodes are even released a day or so early for Patreon supporters. So if you like what we do and can afford it, it'd be great if you could support us at linuxdevtime.com/support. There's also the question when it comes to the Play Store and presumably other app stores of just getting your apps suddenly delisted or deleted or whatever, and there's just not a lot you can do, especially with Google. I see a lot of people complaining about that.
This is a stress that comes up at Element, where I work quite often, that we get a warning that it's going to be delisted and you have like a day to address it. And often it's a thing that you've already addressed last time. You'd explain to them why this happens and how they can help you address it or whatever. And the same thing comes up again. And it causes a lot of stress. And if you were an indie developer and your entire income was based on one app, I think it would be too much stress for me to live with.
That happens often with conversations. And I've seen Daniel Gulch, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, posting about some of his troubles. I think a lot of his income is through selling conversations in the Play Store. So when he receives those warnings, and he gets a lot of them too, yeah, it's very stressful. And the co-op I work for maintains a fork of conversations called Chiogram. And our listing in the Play Store receives just about every single warning that Upstream Conversations receives too. So we experience a lot of that stress and headache too. And it's for the same reasons that we fixed in a previous release. They won't let us upload a new release that fixes a thing for whatever reason. Or when they're reviewing an update, they don't read our instructions and don't test it right, and then it doesn't work right. And of course it wouldn't work right, so then they deny the update, and then it's just a mess. It's ridiculous.
I think I've seen a similar experience with Apple Store as well. I don't think this is limited to Google.
It makes me think that mobile app development is just not even worth it. I mean, we've not even got into the various taxes, you know, the Apple tax of the 30% and everything, and the whole fight with Epic over that. It just really would make me not want to be a mobile developer, I must say.
It makes me so sad that I felt like there was this opportunity for people to sell directly to their users the work of their hands, and it's been destroyed. I think it's partly been destroyed because it's gone mainstream, and that means it has to be regulated, right? So all kinds of stuff like tax and things has to be dealt with, and also content regulation, like protecting children and all that stuff needs to happen. And when it's like an obscure thing, you just essentially forget that you need to do that stuff. And when it becomes mainstream, you have to. And Google and Apple are on the hook for like really serious fines or whatever if they don't protect children from horrible, horrible content. So, you know, they have to protect themselves, and I don't know how to avoid that part of it. But yeah, the 30% tax could certainly be taken away, and the stuffing the store with a load of generated slop means that actual humans can't make a living there anymore, I think.
Well, I think it's just that the price has been driven down to near zero for the actual app itself, which is why everything is switching over to service-based stuff, right? You have an app that you like the service of, you have to have some sort of service component to have some sort of reoccurring revenue on a monthly basis or whatever, but it's unfortunate, but I mean, I think there still is opportunity there. It's just, it's a different opportunity now.
I'm really interested to see how the release, adoption, use, etc. of Andresilo pans out in the next few weeks. We did a small release where the client, instead of communicating directly with Google, communicates with our own servers. And there's a trial. You get something like 4 queries for free. After that, you have to buy a key. But right now, distribution is only as an APK downloaded from SourceHut. Once we get a little bit more testing of this new release, we're going to try and put it in F-Droid, and that will be the only distribution channel. It'll be, you download the app from F-Droid, you get your 4 free queries, and you can either decide to change the backend to your self-hosted instance or continue using our instance, in which case you have to pay. So F-Droid wouldn't be taking any cut. It just goes directly to us through our website.
Remind me what what that app is. It's called Andrasilo, did you say?
Andrasilo, it's an Esperanto word that I think means like place search tool. It's for searching for places in Google Maps and opening those results in whatever navigation app you like Organic Maps. You search for your business, tap the open button, and Organic Maps takes over getting you to that place.
Right, right. You'll have fun with the F-Droid people, because if it's tied to a specific server, they're going to want to put a warning on it when they list it.
It defaults to our server that is open source, but you can change it to any other server.
They'll probably be fine with that.
It'll just label it as anti-feature.
Yeah, no, I think if you can change it, then it won't be an anti-feature. One of the things I had to do with Boxstacker, it talks to like a high score server, or not a high score, it like stores replays of your successful attempts and things like that. And in order for them to not put an anti-feature on it on F-Droid, I had to add a setting screen where you can change the server of where it stores those replays and what forum software it connects to send a forum post saying I've done this level. And like, no user will ever want to use that option screen, but it is now there. So there you go.
Another thing we did in the server component to allow it to hopefully allow it into F-Droid, we haven't attempted it, so we don't know whether it'll succeed or not. The feature that makes all of this useful is communicating with Google Maps. They would definitely apply the requires non-free network anti-feature.
Yeah.
So the backend also supports Mozilla's Nominatim service. And in the backend, it defaults to Nominatim, and you can switch it to Google Maps if you like.
Nice. So you might get away with it. I mean, a lot of apps on F-Droid do have an anti-feature listed, right? It doesn't necessarily kill them or anything. I was actually really impressed with the F-Droid people.
Yes.
It took a lot of work to get my app in, and there's a lot of things that are a bit awkward about the build process and stuff like that. But fundamentally, they actually did read the code of my app and figure out that it was tied to a specific service, and check that it's properly open source. And I actually use the reproducible builds thing. So they actually are genuinely guaranteeing for their users that the source code that was used to build the app is identical to what's in my GitHub repo, and I'm not cheating in some way. So actually, it gave me greater trust in the apps I download from F-Droid. I was really impressed.
I know almost nothing about the kind of mobile industry, but is there any sort of like automated scanning to figure out whether or not your app is doing something malicious or potentially malicious, or do they do that sort of stuff for F-Droid as well?
I'm pretty sure it's manual. Like, people read the code of my app to figure out what it was doing, which is impressive. It may not scale. But...
Well, so they don't do all AI scanning like Google do then?
Nope.
I expect they have some sort of scanning, but I don't know what it is.
They run it in a sandbox and check what network requests it makes and stuff like that. So they have that stuff.
Yeah, I've seen companies that'll do stuff like that, or they'll run it in different sandboxes with artificial like geotag limits, or rather geofencing, to figure out if the apps do different things in different areas. I've seen stuff like that before, but I didn't know how much F-Droid does. And then does Google have a similar thing to Apple where, like, if you make money through this app, even outside of our store, we still get some sort of a crazy cut?
I'm actually not sure about that. I feel like generally they're a little bit more flexible than Apple, but I don't know what the details of the terms and conditions are there.
I know with one of the stores, they check the payment mechanism and they don't allow links to external payment portals inside the app. So if you install Netflix, you either use the in-app mechanism through the store or the user just can't pay. They have to know, I have to go to netflix.com and pay, and then I can log in through the app.
Right.
I don't remember whether that's one store or both of them, but that's a really shitty practice.
Right. That was the big controversy with Apple, if I remember correctly, and I didn't follow it super closely, so I could be incorrect. It was exactly that. They wanted you to pay through their method so they could take their cut. And if there was a way, or even hinting at, you can pay in other methods, like you can download the app and then you can just go to our website, then Apple would redirect that or try and claim the 30% on like all profits you made. And I didn't know if Google was doing a similar thing as well, or if this was like just purely an Apple thing.
Well, it gets even worse with Apple with the Patreon thing. If you sign up through the Patreon app, then you end up paying more to support creators because Patreon by default just charges the Apple tax to you.
exactly as I would imagine, like 99% of businesses were like, oh, we're going to be charged more on Apple. Great. We'll just pass that on, which is shitty. And I wish that didn't happen. But I mean, the Apple 30% cut is crazy in my mind.
It's interesting, isn't it? Both Apple and Google have made a vast amount of money from this 30% tax. But at some point, I feel like it's going to explode in their face. Like, it's just too much. You know, if it was 5%, then probably people would just take the pain. But instead of that, people are fighting it. And I think that will get more because it's just a ridiculous amount.
Well, the only way that that will end is through regulation. And we've seen a bit of that in the EU. Something tells me we're not going to see that in the US in the next few years, but you never know.
Well, why hasn't the market helped us here? Why do we need regulation to do it for us? Is it because the market's not as powerful as we think?
It's almost as if that's true, yeah. The thing is that on Android, you've got stores like F-Droid, and you can even add repos to F-Droid, but normal people do not do that. They see the big scary warning, and they go, oh, right, I'm not going to do that then. I'm not going to install from third party.
It's not even just like happy little people like F-Droid, right? There is an Amazon app store that they really tried to make into a thing, but and a Galaxy, like a Samsung Galaxy app store that they tried to make a thing, and no one uses them.
No, if it's not on the Play Store, it doesn't exist in Android, yeah. Effectively.
Yeah.
Unless you're a nerd like us who doesn't mind messing around with F-Droid.
All I can do is just use F-Droid, talk about F-Droid, and like wish that that was a thing.
Valve does take a 30% fee on games in Steam, so they are just as bad in that respect as Google Play and Apple.
It's too much.
I think with Valve, there's different levels that they require, and it depends on the volume of sales. I remember reading a post a while back about like, hey, how much do you actually make when you indie publish something to Steam? And there was a lot of conditions that determined like how much they took and that. So I don't know if I would say it was as bad as Apple, although, yeah, I mean, it is still a high cut from what I understand. However, I think also with Valve, you're probably far more likely, like the value of the game has not been driven down as low as on, you know, Apple Play Store. Like, I don't go to Steam and expect to pay 99 cents or less.
That is very true.
So there's still some value to be had there. And you're also talking about smaller volume too, but then at the same time, it's also probably a much bigger endeavor. Like, you don't see the same, or at least I haven't seen the same kind of like AI generated slop targeted at, you know, 5-year-olds when you're looking at the Steam store.
I think the bar to get listed on Steam is higher, even though there's a lot of complaints about how there's bad stuff on Steam. It's not quite as bad as the slop you see on Play Store.
But to be fair to Valve, even with their own hardware, you can install whatever you want. You just put it into desktop mode and you can install old emulators or, you know, brand new games from indie developers if you want. You don't have to use the Steam store.
Yeah, and also to be clear, like, I don't mind a store charging some kind of a fee. I just think the 30% is ridiculous, especially if you start trying to like charge that same 30% for all profits made outside of your store that aren't even using your services. Like that's ridiculous.
And it's been a license to print money, and it's just unfair and wrong. But the idea of paying something for a recommendation service or an algorithm service, I feel like it's actually something we should try and normalize, right? I feel like we should replace the current social media rubbish with you choose your algorithm that suggests the next video, and you choose your algorithm that does your feed on your social media. And maybe you pay them in some way. Maybe they just insert adverts or something, and you value that service, but you also get to choose one that works the way you want it to work.
You can do that with YouTube to some extent, by thumbing up stuff that you like, thumbing down stuff you don't like, removing stuff from your history, deliberately seeking out certain videos. So you can train the algorithm to some extent.
You can influence how the algorithm works for you, but you can't change to a different algorithm. For example, one that just is completely privacy friendly or whatever.
Well, I think it's just somewhat opaque. Like if we take it back to the games example, I actually really enjoy when I can look at a game on Steam or wherever, and it says, hey, you've played a lot of these different games. Here's one that's very similar. And sometimes it's great. It is extremely similar. I'm like, wow, I also love this game. Other times, not so much. And it's really difficult to figure out how I could tweak that. Or even if I could just make my own, if it was easier for people to say, hey, you like these types of games or you like these specific titles, here are ones that you may also like, which I'm sure they're doing to an extent. But if there was a more open way to do that and to like make that known to the public, I think that would be awesome. That'd be a like huge benefit.
It would. And somehow we should value it, right? So the way this is going to work for PeerTube to become as useful as YouTube is someone is going to build an algorithm system on top of all the videos on PeerTube and probably on YouTube too, and recommend things to use in a way that is as good as the YouTube algorithm, which is really, really good. And we need to value that and be prepared to pay in some way for it.
Well, I think this is getting slightly off the topic, but with PeerTube specifically, but I don't know that it's just the recommendations that keep people off of PeerTube. Keep people off sounds far harsher than I mean. What I mean is like there are other considerations as well, like bandwidth considerations, like how quick is the video going to download, or do I have to, you know, give up some of my bandwidth or whatever. Like there are other things to consider besides just like, is it recommending the correct videos to me?
Yeah, we're back to 20 years ago where you press play and then you have to pause it while it buffers. Like nobody has time for that these days.
I agree, but a recommendation algorithm would also, the same way Google does, it would be more likely to recommend stuff that has decent bandwidth and is going to play well. So like I feel like for me, I basically never watch videos on PeerTube, and it's because I don't know what's on PeerTube. And if there was a really good recommendation algorithm, I would probably be discovering interesting stuff.
Well, that's because there is no one PeerTube, right? It's federated.
Exactly, which is why you need someone to index it for you.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not even sure that is the thing, right? So there's so much stuff on YouTube, and most of that stuff is awful. Just because it's all on one server doesn't actually fix the problem. You need the algorithm to find the stuff you want.
Yeah, but if I want to search for a particular guitar pedal, like I want to see the Boss DS1, I want to see some demos of that, I can search that on YouTube and get like 100 videos of that. Where do I go with PeerTube to find videos of that? I just wouldn't even know where to start.
There is a search service for PeerTube, which should be able to do that. And I will find the link and you can put it in the show notes.
It's called Sepia Search.
There you go.
All right. Well, I just searched for Boss DS1 and there are no videos about the Boss DS1 pedal. There's Boss of This Bizarre Adventure, which does not look very safe for work, shall we say.
I mean, that's another service, by the way, that algorithms could provide. Let's not call them algorithms, but recommendation engines could provide, right? Is what is your safe for work preference? At the moment, sometimes PeerTube isn't that safe. And if you were using a recommendation engine that was that had a higher level of safety, that would also be a valuable service. So we should be prepared to pay them about 5%, not 30%. And there should be competition.
Right, well, we'd better get out of here then. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. But until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Omelith.
I've been Kevin.
And I've been Andy.
See you later.